and welcome to MotoPod, the internet radio show all about motorcycle road racing. This is episode number 361 for Wednesday, the 1st of May, 2013. Happy May Day, everybody, when you listen to this last Wednesday. My name's Martin Darlington. I'm in a grey north of Wales, having had some wonderful sun in the last few days, but I bet it's sunny in California, because with me is Jim Race across. Actually, it's not sunny, is it? Because it's middle of the night.
Yes, it is the middle of the night. We once again have our time travel cap going. Actually, you know, Martin, we should rent out the Motopod temporal portal for a minimal fee to those people that actually need to. You know, as far as I know, though, it only goes forwards, but that might work pretty well, you know, for those of you that are into sports betting. That being said, you would miss the weekend's races, which is kind of funny, Martin, because right now here it's 10 after 11 or something like that p.m. And in a mere 50 minutes, we've got Moto3 FP1 starting up.
Yeah, and it looks a bit gray and drizzly at Jerez, which is disappointing.
But my understanding is the weather is supposed to clear up and actually be brilliant there this weekend, as well, from what I understand, at Olden Park.
Yep. No, we're looking at a nice weekend, a little bit of wind, but almost completely dry. It should be just up the road from us here. Unfortunately, I'm working, so I'm not going to make it this weekend to Alton, but that's always good racing there. And we often get good racing at Jerez, so something to look forward to.
Absolutely, absolutely. Something else to look forward to. You managed to nab a interview and a chat. Well, I don't think we can call these interviews anymore because they're not like that. A chat with Charlie Hiscott. He's the Eurosport UK TV producer for World Superbike Assen and a season ahead. Give me a little rundown on that, and we'll run that later in the show.
Yeah, I spoke to Charlie yesterday about Assen and how various people did, general comments on some of the riders doing better than expected, doing worse than expected. That'd be Loris Baz and Marco Melandri, respectively. We did a bit on World Supersport, and we had a quick chat about MotoGP and the feelings amongst Charlie and his crew on what's happening across in the other paddock. And it's about 45 minutes. And Charlie's always an interesting commentator. And although he's a producer, he's also doing a fair amount of pit lane reporting now as well. So quite often you'll hear him, even if you don't see him on Eurosport.
We as we progress in this, Martin, we always multitask. As you know, I spent a fair amount of today working on the Dorna contract, which I'm very excited about. And you guys will out there in Motopod land will get the benefit from this. Very stoked about that. Donators in the last week, people that have helped support or helping support Motopod to continue our quest to bring you the coolest stuff on the planet and the most inside and unedited and raw content from the racers we talk to. These are the folks that have shown up in the last week, and thank you so much. And the cool thing about it, Martin, is that the subscriber thing is picking up. So these are the names: Anthony Pryor, subscriber; Martin Gurney, same; Michael Mulder; Scott Taylor; Emma Murakani, we'll get you on the subscriber list sooner or later; Carl Marsh, our resident Motopod chef, also in with a subscription. Well, I say that because he's a professional chef for a large meat and food company here in the States, quite well known, Omaha Steaks. Ronald Sheffo. Ronald, please write in and let me know if I screwed that up. Helen Jackson, Phil Shuttleworth, and Skip Backus. So all of you guys, thanks very much. 8 out of 10 now subscribers added on to the rest of them. Jules and I are talking in depth about what the subscriber bonuses will be, and we've got some great ideas. We're just trying to solidify it. But rest assured, you guys that are subscribing will see some really cool stuff. What else? Our errata. Martin, this was funny because you actually led the point on this, and I think you were a bit confused yourself last week.
Yes. It was the opening music. It was like it's an endless Spanish national anthem. But, of course, it was Jules had edited the three times it was heard last week because obviously we had a Spanish winner in each of the three classes. So he recorded it from different spots on the circuit where he was shooting from, and sort of edited it into a three-peat mashup, as we've said. So yeah, it was kind of
Yep, there were a couple of people. I think who was the first one that actually pointed that out, that was confused about it? Former interviewee, I believe.
I can't remember.
But it was definitely funny. Anyway, that is the explanation for last week. I wouldn't actually call it errata. I would call it some of the weird little things that we do on the show. Speaking of which, if you're listening to the show right now and you didn't last week listened all the way through the show past the end music and go to the very end, you missed out on a very cool bit.
That was funny.
It was awesome. So basically what I'm saying is that every so often, and more often than not, Jules and I will pull something out of a hat, something that is particularly when we're at a race weekend, or if we feel like embarrassing either you or myself, Martin, with kind of things that are a little bit out of the ordinary. So the closing music that we have at the end of the show doesn't quite mean the show is over. So if you're driving in your car and you hear the closing music, don't hit stop. Just let it keep going. It's well worth it.
I can just see lots of people now going back to old episodes and whizzing straight to the end to see if there is anything. And there is more often than not.
Yeah, it's not a bad idea. If you want to get Motopod content that you've never heard before and you always quit it at the closing music, oh man, there's probably hours and hours. Some of it quite astounding. But last week's was awesome.
And it segues very nicely into our news.
You go.
Kevin Schrontz was interviewed and made a few points about, was asked about Danny Pedrosa specifically, amongst other things. And he suggested that he needs some changes in his life to go to the top of step in his 8-year title hunt. This was reported widely across the news media, so a lot of you will have seen this. Alberto Puig got absolutely stuck into him with, he talked about sharing a podium with him and the respect he had at Hockenheim and then said, but all the respect I've had for you is now gone. What have you done? You know, basically saying, you know, Danny's going to be, you know, Danny has already achieved more than you did, blah, blah, blah. Danny Pedrosa himself was fairly cool about it and just said, look, you know, I'm just doing what I do. And I thought, yeah, I think Alberto Puig is a bit of a, methinks the lady doth protest too much. It's like, Schrontz is a commentator now, and he's been asked his opinion, and he's given it. And the reaction is, makes me think, you know, oh, he's touched a nerve there. But anyway, if you just Google Schrontz Puig, you're going to get a lot of hits on quite an interesting little war of words going on.
Yeah, well, and on more than a few, because what I try and do is keep a touch point on forums, because forums are very interesting. You kind of get the on the ground feel of what's going on. And so I participate in a bunch of them, and not like Crash or MCN, because those ones just drive me crazy. It's like, it's kind of like the YouTube of comments. Sorry, Crash and MCN. But some interesting non-enlightened conversation, and also occasionally the little jewel that makes you go, and yeah, it certainly did ignite controversy across the net. And frankly, that's where some of the most interesting conversation these days comes right now, because if you can separate the wheat from the chaff, you actually find some pretty cool stuff. I think that is kind of fun. I'm going to skip this one for now, Martin, and I'm going to go straight on to another one right after this, which dovetails. And more news out of Kevin. Kevin number 34, Schwantz, announced that he is going to be racing the Suzuki 8-hour race with Team Kageyama, with Yukio Kageyama and Noriyuki Hage. For me, it's great to have Noriyuki back on the bike. Kevin is 49 years old. And the comment that you had originally put in here, Martin, was he last competed in a tough event over 2 decades ago, but he isn't ruling out a win. And my note was, well, Kevin rides the track pretty much every day when he's not traveling. And he has competed in events recently in pretty tough endurance club racing with Weir and CMRA. And the club racing over here is no joke. As recently as a couple of weeks ago, and I believe he even won down at Texas Motor Speedway with his team. So I don't think, you know, he did an AMA event a couple of years ago and didn't sparkle. But I think that team will be pretty good. Kageyama's hot. Not sure what Nori's been doing, but there's no doubt that the Japanese teams pull out all the stops for that race.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's a very high level in it. Certainly in the riders and the equipment they throw at it. It's a very high level event. The thing that shocked me most was when I thought Kevin Schwantz 49. I just presumed he was older than that. I thought, God, he's only 2 years older than me, which made me feel old. But then I realized, well, yeah, I suppose. And it kind of highlighted how short their careers are. You know, even the guys, you know, okay, Troy Bayliss ran till he was 40, but he's the exception rather than the rule, running at the top. And it's like, wow. But yeah, be interesting to see. Someone noted, I think their combined age of the three riders in that team is something like 124. And it's like, wow.
Well, there's no doubt that racing ages you, even if you're doing it at the club level. Trust me on that. And also on that same note, it's quite possible that, and no confirmation yet, but the whispers are way too loud to just be a rumor, that Valentino Rossi and Cal Crutchlow will team up for Suzuka. And it was funny today, those of you that saw the press conference, which we'll talk about a little bit more in a bit. Cal kind of dodged a question in the press conference today. Let me see if I can paraphrase his words. He said, it's not something that we talk about outside of closed doors, so I don't really know anything about it.
Yeah.
I thought that was like the best way to put it. He kind of had a little bit of a smirk on his face, as in it's something I'm not supposed to talk about. But he did say, obviously and wisely, that his focus right now was on MotoGP. And I'm certain that, I'm not certain that Rossi, when he would be presented with a challenge like Suzuka, for him, I think, you know, with his adventures in NASCAR and Formula One and rally cars, for him, it's just another part of the puzzle in the game. I think he'd be all good to go. And I think a nod and a wink, and he could probably talk Cal into it pretty easy.
Yeah, I had some vague memory, and I can't remember whether it was from his book or elsewhere, that Rossi had said, you know, he had to do it a couple of times as part of his contract, but as soon as he has a chance to rewrite it, so, you know, he didn't have to go to Suzuka. He did, not because he didn't enjoy the event. It's just, you know, traveling there and then the race itself and then traveling back was absolutely exhausting. So, yeah, be interesting to see if they get there or not.
Yeah. The press conference today, to continue with that, David Emmett of Moto Batters, basically the funniest thing today. And I want to point out to everybody that you have to watch the press conference, because you can hear the mirth in his voice. You can see the smiles on the face of the guys on the podium as the question is being asked. But he basically posed a question regarding the U.S. basketball star that came out the other day and basically admitted he was gay. He didn't admit he was gay. He basically just wanted to point out to people that he was, and he thought that it was interesting that nobody else had. Well, yeah. David took that and ran with it in the press conference, the MotoGP pre-race press conference today, and basically posed a question to the six guys that were up on the box, that being Redding, Marquez, Lorenzo, Brattle, Crutchlow, and who else?
I think that was it. Oh, no, Dovey. No, Dovey.
Yeah, and Dovey. And said, kind of said, well, so a U.S. basketball star came out. It's interesting that we haven't heard anything about gay people in the MotoGP paddock. And do you have any thoughts about that? And Cal, of course, stuck his hand up first and said, well, can I come in first? I don't want to give anything away. I'm sure there's highlights out there and you can watch it. There is a Cycle News article on it with almost all of the answers, with the exception of Scott Redding's. They didn't include that in there, but it was great. And apparently it set Twitter alight.
I've been looking through that this morning, and there are some serious points being made. There was, I think it was David himself said there was one PR person who'd spoken to him and said they didn't feel comfortable in the paddock and left on the grounds of their sexuality, which he found, you know, concerning. But he said it's not the racers. He said it quite clearly that they don't care. You know, yeah. you get on a bike, you race it. It doesn't matter whether you're male, female, you know, gay, whatever. It's the older people in the paddock, which I think is reflected in society. But Stefan Bradl's answer was just brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. I don't want to steal David's thunder, so people go out there and find it. But Stefan Bradl made a very, I think, a very valid point whilst wrapping it up in very good humor. So who said the Germans haven't got a sense of humor?
I know. It was kind of funny. You expected to go to Stefan because everybody else, the two people that actually provided something that was amusing were Cal as the opener and Stefan as the near closer. That was cool. What else? We know that Ben Spies is going to be out this weekend.
Yep.
Michele Pirro is going to run as a wild card, not as a replacement. And I was changing the verbiage on that, Martin, as you were talking earlier. I'm not sure if it's as a wild card, but I know there is no replacement for Ben this weekend, but he is going to be running on the Ducati quote unquote lab bike. So this is a highly modified GP13, perhaps a GP13.5 or 2.5, if you want, with a bunch of different parts. And there has been some photographic evidence that the bike is substantially different from the GP13 that the teams are running. So that's pretty cool. So there will be no substitute for Ben. The Pramac team will be running with one bike, although Michele may be running out of the garage. I don't know.
Well, interestingly, the interview with Charlie, he mentions Ducati and Herr Gobmeier, who's now heading up the race team, who Charlie knew, got to know quite well when he was running the inaugural BMW Superbike team. And he had some interesting points to make about him. So that's something to look forward to in the chat we have with Charlie, which we'll roll a bit later on.
Why don't we just roll it right now, Martin?
Well, should we just quickly go through the World Superbike results from Assen? We can skip through them fairly quickly because they are talked about with me and Charlie, but we sort of bounce around talking about individuals and referring to things that may not make a huge amount of sense, just in case people haven't heard the results.
Okay. Well, I've kind of given up on worrying about that. But one more thing, Jules and I have been talking about it. It's like, if people are listening to the show and they don't know the results, it's like, really? One last thing, just a kind of a shout out. BN Sports in the U.S. is like continuing to astound us with their road racing coverage for World Superbike. And I don't say this lightly, because for years and years now, we've kind of been subject to television where you get like 30 minutes of racing and 30 minutes of commercials. They're streaming 5 hours live coverage over the net, and they're doing 5 hours of live coverage in HD over their television networks in both English and Spanish, with very few commercials. This last weekend, they included World Superstock, which we never got to see here in the States. We always had to figure out an quote-unquote alternative way to watch it if we wanted to. We get Super Bowl. We've never gotten that before, only on a very rare occasions over the last year or so through the Speed TV network. So we're very stoked. Our television situation over here right now is very good with World Superbike. And we just got let known just in the last week and a half or so that we will now actually have, because we didn't know until now, and it's well after the second race, TV coverage for our national series, AMA Superbike, through the CBS Sports Network. So Speed TV and Fox will be covering MotoGP. CBS Sports Network will be covering AMA, and BN will be covering World Superbike. And for those people that don't get it on their cable network, they can watch it online for free. So it's very cool.
That's very impressive.
Yeah.
Definitely.
It was very, very last minute too. So, skin of our teeth. Is that an American term?
I don't know.
Yeah, because you prefer that teeth not have skin, right?
Yeah, I know. Yeah, it sounds a bit gross, though, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
Cannibalistic.
It does. So just a word of the wise, Martin, because as you well know, I've been super busy this week. And so my understanding and comprehension of the World Superbike and certainly the World Supersport races, which I haven't seen at all. Although I have seen the World Superbike very, very recently, just before this call, is minimal. So this is where you fly the flag, my friend. Oh, wait. Ooh.
Yep.
Hang on. Pardon me. Damn. It may be late, but...
Hey, here we go. Have you got a glass?
Ah, fuck it.
It's early in the morning. I'm on coffee, but I did manage to get one of those into the interview with Charlie yesterday. The sun was over the yard arm, so I was having a quick Guinness in the afternoon, as you do.
Well done.
Yeah, Assen, very changeable weather at first. You've got horrible weather at first. Friday and Saturday were both disrupted, although it did clear up on Saturday afternoon for Super Pole. But we had some interesting people near the front on the Friday practice. Tom Sykes went out and just went a second and a half quicker than everyone else, almost to show what he could do. And on Saturday, a couple of people got caught out, notably our double race winner from Aragon, Chaz Davis, was comfortably in fifth or sixth, or was it seventh or eighth, as we came into the last minute or two, sat in his pit, and everyone below him just suddenly put in a quick lap, and he ended up being punted out and ended up 13th on the grid.
My understanding is that he had a functional problem that at the time they didn't know, and they'd never have released specifically what that issue was. So he basically had to pit.
Yeah, right. Fair enough. Yeah, he certainly had a face like thunder. But Super Bowl, we had Tom Sykes, over half a second quickest, with Johnny Ray, who always does well at Assen, and Eugene Laverty was the front row. Gintoli, Loris Baz, and Davide Giuliano, second row. Melandri, Carlos Checa, and Michel Fabrizio made up the third row. They were the Super Bowl three contenders, and so on and so forth backwards. Race one, Tom Sykes just pulled the pin and went, which we've seen before. The difference this time was he just kept going and kept going, and he ended up, he won by nearly 9 seconds from a brilliant to watch Johnny Ray. I mean, that fire blade. Again, Charlie will talk a little bit about conversations with Ronald Ten Carter, Ronald McDonald, as he refers to him. and the fact that they're saying, no, it's not that slow compared to the others. They said, you might call it the oldest bike. We say it's the most developed. but Johnny Ray had a great battle with Sivan Gintoli and Eugene Laverty, and came out on top of the three of them. So we had the race finished with Sykes, Ray, Gintoli with a podium. Laverty, Loris Baz impressing everybody. Really strong ride from Loris. Davide Giuliano. Chaz came in seventh, very creditable from 13th. Juice Clazel, Leon Camier. Carlos Checa still struggling, I think, with the aftermath of the injuries he picked up at PI. Max Neukirchner, nice to see Max still out there. Michel Fabrizio, Ayrton Badovini, Ivan Clementi, and Mark Aitchison picked up the last point. And Mark, of course, is racing for Team Effenbert Liberty Racing because they're back again.
Sort of.
Yeah, kind of, at the moment. Let's see how that one goes. But Marco Melandri, on the warm-up lap, had a problem. Now, initially, we were thinking it was electronics. James Whitten was saying, look, it looks like he's turning everything off, turning it back on, but no joy. And the word from the team, it was as a transmission issue. So that was disappointing for Marco, who's not having the best of times. That BMW, when it goes, is immense. It's incredibly fast, but they do seem to be having a few issues with it, and possibly Marco's having a few issues with himself.
Well, look at it this way. Who did they lose this year?
In terms of backroom staff?
Uh-huh.
Go on.
Godmeyer.
Yes, well, last year, wasn't it? He went last year. Yeah. Suppose, yes, it would have been the end of last season. Yeah. And definitely, I think he was a driving force. race two, well, we'll talk about World Super Sport briefly because chronologically, of course, that came next. But we'll do World Superbike race two. Eugene, don't know what he did, but he was able to stick with Tom. And about two-thirds of the way through the race, he popped himself in front of Tom. And I think everyone expected to see him pull the pin, but Tom managed to hang with him. And they had a great battle right to the end. Unfortunately, because they're having such a good battle, we weren't able to see the punch-up going on behind them, where you had Loris Batz, Johnny Ray, Chaz Davis, Sylvain Guintoli, Leon Camier, and a little bit behind them, Marco Melandri and Michel Fabrizio, in a huge dust-up. Just really, certainly those five guys who were fighting for the last podium step. And Loris Batz came out on top. And I remember being with Charlie and James Whittam and Jack Burnicle at Alton last year. And his name came up because we were watching that in the same weekend we were at Alton. The World Superbikes were at Monza with that incredibly disastrous downpour weekend where they gave half points and one race was abandoned. And they were talking about Loris, and James Whittam said, he's very good in the wet. I'll say he's very good full stop when I see him be very good in the dry. And I think, Loris is pulling it together. He's on a great bike, but he's obviously very, very capable. So cracking effort from him. Johnny Ray picked up another good fourth place. And it was a really, really good, typical World Superbike fairing bashing, beat each other up kind of race.
Well, the one thing that actually impressed me about both races was the very, very clean aggressiveness of the passes that Johnny Ray was making. And he was setting them up from so far back, because it was clear that, maybe the most developed bike, but what it has is, with Johnny on it, is the capability of building momentum through corners and making it through gaps that don't exist. There was one pass that he put on Sylvain that I thought was going to end in tears, and it ended up being just a brilliant pass through the final chicane that I never thought was going to happen. So tip of the hat to Jonathan Ray. Some of those passes were just amazing. Well done.
Absolutely. And it's also worth mentioning, really, really sad news, that on the Friday there was a practice crash and Leon Haslam had his leg trapped and caught by the rear wheel and has had quite a nasty leg break. It's almost the John Hopkins. If he didn't have bad luck, he wouldn't have any luck. Get well soon, Leon. He is one seriously tough cookie. So I won't be surprised to see him back a lot earlier than people expect. In the standings, Sylvain's been quietly going about his business and has a reasonably healthy little lead there. He's on 111 points. On 83 points, we have Eugene Laverty, Chaz Davis, and Tom Sykes. So, definitely they have got some work ahead, those guys. But it's World Superbikes. There's 50 points available each weekend, so I expect to see Sylvain struggle to hold on to a lead of that magnitude,
we keep saying that, but he's had that lead he's been tied since the first race.
Absolutely. And he is doing a cracking job. We've got Johnny Ray in fifth on 63 points, Loris Batz just 5 points behind him, Michel Fabrizio 5 points further back, and Marco Melandri. Interesting. He's on 51. And Jules Cluzel impressing everybody on the Suzuki, which hopefully will get some decent support.
And as you know from an email that I forwarded to yourself and Jules today, who are we going to have on the show next week?
I haven't read that yet.
Oh, you loser. some guy named Sylvain.
Oh, sorry, I did see that. Yes, I saw your to and fro with Sylvain. That'll be great fun. And of course, as a Brit, I'm very happy to claim Sylvain as a slightly strangely accented Brit. He lives in England. He's married to an English girl. He's pretty much ours. We're claiming him.
Well, you guys claimed Hopkins until you disowned him.
We didn't disown him. He's welcome back anytime.
Right.
World Super Sport. Now, this is interesting. There was some interviews done during the PI weekend, the opening weekend of World Superbike season, and before the race had happened, and I think we referred to it, and Sam Lowes had talked about Keenan and said, you know, he's not a rider I like at all. So that was really stressed that, you know, I don't like him as a person, but he said, you have to respect him. He's a great racer, blah, blah. Then Keenan was just so generous and magnanimous, and you'll hear Charlie talk about Keenan, and it might put a slightly different perspective on him because he's not a particularly popular rider, but I'm having to start to think I really quite like listening to him. He's interesting and interested. He's very passionate, but he's a great interviewer or interviewee. And he and Sam had pole position, Keenan just behind him, Fabian Frey just behind them. Or that was the front row. Jack Kennedy did a great job, got himself on the second row with Robbie Rolfo, who's just, it's fantastic to see. I think Robbie must have raced in every series, in every level of his class of bikes. He's just been there forever. And another one similar, Lucas Gasser, made up the second row. Vladimir Leonov, Sam Lowes' teammate, Florian Marino, and Vladimir Ivanov's row three. Strange to see Michael van der Mark, who's been doing so well, was in middle of row four at what could be considered his home round. Strange. Expected him to do better as far as the pole positions went. The race itself was the Lowes and Sofwoglu show. They ran most of the race with Sam tucked in behind Keenan. Keenan almost certainly let him pass. Sam quite possibly let him back pass when he realised he couldn't lose him. And we had the classic last lap, Keenan leading Sam into that wonderful chicane at the very last corner, and Sam did him. And it was almost a double bluff. If anyone used to watch Formula One, Mansell's pass on Nelson Piquet at Brands Hatch in 87, I think it was Brands Hatch, where he dodged, he went one side, Piquet went across to block him, and he just double bluffed him, whipped the other side and went past. It was almost like that. And Keenan did his almost patented, I'm going to stick my leg horizontally out to try and stop you. And it didn't work. So Sam got by. But again, Keenan interviewed afterwards laughing, just, yeah, you know, I did my very best to keep up with Sam, but unfortunately he was better than me today. So, you know, and he was brilliant. He was absolutely brilliant.
Martin, well done.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not sure if you can drag your voice that high, but you had the growl down.
I really enjoy listening to Keenan before and after races. Fabian Frey came in a very credible third, and Michael van der Mark, this kid is good. His team are really, really happy with him. Ronald McDonald.
you think?
Yeah. I mean, I think they're chuffed they got a Dutch rider, and he's really turning on because he came in fourth all the way up to 11th.
I think one of the things that the Tancotta brothers are very good at is finding talent.
Yeah.
They certainly have found a diamond in the rough, and perhaps a diamond that just needed to be buffed off a bit, because Vandermark has actually proven to be, I would say in the super sport ranks this year, he's kind of a surprise, much like, and maybe we shouldn't think of it that way, but Sylvain, people that you didn't think were going to be able to run at the front this season, they're just kind of making you go, whoa, really?
Yep.
Well done.
And he's in second place. I mean, we've got Fabian Frey on 54 points, Michael van der Mark on 49. Then we got Sam Lowes and Keenan Sofwoglu both tied on 45 points. And I think most people see them as the contenders. the strongest title contenders, but you can't write off Fabian, who's been there forever. I mean, that is his paddock. He I think he's got some kind of squatter's rights now. He's been there that long. But Fabian's still up there. So it's not discounting yet, but really, really good. Classic, back to the best that we were used to seeing in World Supersport in days gone by of, you know, real close racing. It was fantastic. It's worth also going, just going back to World Superbikes, thinking about DNFs, we had a very dramatic looking crash from Davide Giuliano where his bike caught fire. And do want to say props to the marshals and the safety crews. And he was fine. He got up and walked away. But his bike had laid down a line of fuel and the bike was on fire and the marshal straight up there put it out. So, you know, good work, guys. That was impressive to see.
When they rolled it in, it was kind of funny because at first Jack was like, oh, you know, that looks distinctly bad. And James wisely pointed out, oh, no, it doesn't look that bad. It's not quite secondhand. You know, they got it out so quickly that that may not be too much work. I pull you back very briefly, Martin, to World Supersport, because this race was one that had something occur that a lot of people may have just kind of missed. PTR Honda, run by Simon Buckmaster, has been a force in the World Supersport ranks for years and years now. They did not have a rider in the top 20. And I can't remember the last time that has happened. Sheridan Marais was injured in qualifying. Luca Marconi went out, probably perhaps their number two rider. Neither of them started. And so we had Nacho Perez. These are all upcoming riders. David Lenortner, and so on and so forth. Matt Davis.
DNF'd.
Yeah. Nobody in the top 20. And that, to be honest, that is a blow for PTR. Something that, and Simon acknowledged that in their press release. He said, "If shitty weekend," to very short paraphrase.
Yeah.
I'm sure they'll pull it back together and be more successful at the next round. But yeah, that was a tough weekend to stomach. They put together a lot of effort and a lot of money to support that team.
Absolutely. Now, there will be a little bit of repeated information you're about to hear, but from a voice that the listeners heard first last year at Owen Park, but there's some very interesting points made. So let's roll with Eurosport UK TV producer Charlie Hiscock.
This is Martin for Motopod, and with me is Charlie Hiscock, producer for Eurosport and interviewer at Times for World Superbikes and BSB. Good afternoon, Charlie, and thanks for joining us.
Hi, Martin. How are you doing?
Yeah, good, good. You guys have just come back from a Assen, which had certainly some changeable weather. It looked like it was pretty challenging the first couple of days, but race day turned out quite nice in the end.
Yeah, it was actually a really good weekend. It was horrendous on Friday. It was not only was it wet, but it was also really, really cold. So I think it was one of those days where people sort of didn't really want to go out unless you really had something to do. People didn't really want to go out, although a lot of people did go out. Tom Sykes obviously went out and went a second and a half quicker than everybody else just to show how at ease he is on the Kawasaki. But yeah, it was a miserable day, but it always looked like it was going to be a better day Saturday and then a good day on Sunday, although it was quite cold. So it was one of those things. There wasn't a lot to be learnt on from people on Saturday, but people were still going out and just having a run round.
Yeah, I mean, when we got to the... in fact, hang on, I'm getting ahead of myself. In the best traditions of Motopod, I just need to open that and pour it, because we do have some purists who say you can't drink Guinness. You can drink it out of a can, but you've got to go via a glass. So there we go. Yeah, on the Saturday, it did seem that some people got caught out by, particularly Chaz Davis stands out on that one, actually getting bumped down and having to start in 13th place because he got knocked out of the Super Pole shootout. Was that him trying to save a qualifying tyre for the second two sessions?
I wouldn't really want to say about that, to be honest with you. I don't know what was going on in that garage at the time because I'm sort of floating around doing a lot of other stuff. So I'm not really in the garage just finding out what's going on. But I know that Chaz just had one of those weekends where it just everything went sort of tits up for him a little bit. I mean, the crash was one thing. Obviously, then a crashing warm up, you know, set him back quite badly. So I don't honestly know what they were doing with tyres stuff like that. I actually normally stand in the garage in Tenkate garage because we're quite welcome there. So I normally know what's going on there, but not so much in the other garages. So it was as much a shock to me as it was to everybody else. I did try and speak to Chaz on Sunday morning after his warm-up crash, but he wasn't in the sort of talking mood, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
So, but I think he did really well. He managed to get himself back together again and get two pretty good results, really, considering.
Yeah, absolutely. And I was going to say, a 10-car garage must have been quite a happy place to be. I mean, Johnny always does well at Assen. I think what he's won there four times in the past. So yeah. He got second in race one. Tom, I think a lot of us watching were waiting for the tyres to go off, and they just didn't. I mean, he just kept putting down lap after lap after that. It was an incredibly dominant display.
It was, and I have to say, rather, domination was apparent really early from that first Friday when people were sort of fanning around out on track and doing bits and bobs, and Tom, there was a couple of quick times at that comment. I think Gintoni put in quite a quick time, and then Tom went, I think it was second and a half quicker than everybody else, on a wet, crappy track where actually there was nothing really to be learned. I think he was just showing what he can do. And actually, you know what it's like with Tom. You know he's fast in qualifying. You know he's going to be really quick over a few laps. But he does, you know, over the last season or so, he's not been able to hold it for the whole race. And I have to say, he was fantastic in race one. And I wouldn't want to say it was surprising, but you know what it's like. You do expect him to tail off towards the end of the race, whether it be tyre wear or whatever the situation is. Sometimes you do expect him to not be caught. And actually, to be fair, after the first race, I thought it was even more impetus on Eugene Laverty that he managed to stay with him and beat him in the second race. You know, full credit to Eugene, because Tom hadn't slowed down at all.
No. They obviously made some tweaks at work. I mean, Johnny, you could see the onboard camera footage was fantastic, but you could see every time they got to anything resembling a straight, the Kawasaki's and the Aprilia's were just pulling away from him. And there was pretty smart sod all he could seem to be able to do about it.
Well, after Aragon, I have to say, I went out to Assen. I mean, we got on very well with the Tenkate squad. They look after us really nicely, and they're a really nice team. But I did go out there with an idea that I was actually going to ask a few pointed questions about how long in the tooth the CBR's got, and, you know, the fact they're getting blown. They looked like they were getting, you know, he was getting walked all over on the straights in Aragon. And actually, the team are absolutely positive that the bike isn't actually that slow. They've taken on the new MotoGP electronics package. That's taken a bit of time to sort out, and they're pretty confident that it's not the speed of the bike, it's getting it off the corners quite like the BMW and the Aprilia do. It's actually the Honda is actually quite a lot of horsepower quicker than it was last year, but it's getting it off the turns. And actually, I think having been told that, and then when you watch it with that in mind, actually, Jonathan does look like he's moving in the sort of crack off the turn, you know. And that's obviously going to. I mean, the bike's not going to be the fastest. It's, however, you know, it's old now, and they're doing the best. You could also say that it's the most developed bike there. But I think you'll find it's an electronic issue more so than a power issue. But I mean, that's a question for one or ten cars, obviously. But that's the feeling I got, because I thought I went out there with a firm intention of saying, look, come on, have you reached a ceiling with, you know, because ten cars obviously build the fastest bikes on earth, or they used to. So how can they have such a slow bike now? And one was fairly insistent that it wasn't really a power thing, it's more an electronical problem that they're electronical, made it word. It's an electric problem, not a problem, but it's just something that they're taking time to bed into. You know, they've got a new electronics package, it takes time to get these things working quite as well as the opposition. Having said that, obviously the BMW is horrendously fast, and that's at the end of the day, you can't, you know, you do need the speed, although there might be more corners, and you know, people will say that, you know, there's more corners than straights, but actually, if you're going to get blown away down every straight like Jonathan's having to ride the bike so hard now. I mean, he reminded me, there was a couple of shots I saw of him at Assen where he actually reminded me of Norik Harbe, because he was on such a different line to everybody else, because he's using so much road and he's trying so hard to use absolutely everything he's got.
Yeah.
He was just on a different line to everybody else a lot of the time. So, yeah, there you go.
Yeah, I mean, the BMW, when it works, seems to be blisteringly quick, but then so are the Aprilias and the Kawasaki's, but it does seem to have some issues. And we saw Marco Melandri on the warm-up lap bouncing up and down and banging things, and James Ritten was saying, no, he's turning it off and turning it off, thinking it was electronics. It turns out, apparently, people are saying it was a gearbox issue.
Well, I went in to ask. I did actually go and ask. When that happened, immediately after that happened, I went to ask Goldbet. But again, I'm a little bit limited because I can't get down to the garage as quickly as I want to. So I asked one of their PR person, and they get a message down to someone in the garage, and it just came back with a transmission. She didn't actually understand what they told me, and all I got out of it was basically it was a transmission fault. Now, what that meant was, I don't know whether the chain came off it, or whether it was the final drive, whether it was a gearbox. I didn't really find out what the crack was. And then they, once Gobet, they go, obviously they're sort of German-Italian team, they're very quick to close the doors on everything, and you don't really get in. They're quite hard to get into. They're not like... like a Tancato, where you can just wander in and start asking pointed questions to whoever you want to get. It's a bit different at Golbet because they do close the doors. Like, you're not really supposed to just go and interview Marco. You're supposed to wait until he's put outside a board, outside the garage at a certain time, and then you can ask him a couple of questions, and it's a bit more kind of like that way. But I don't think, I mean, Marco's technical problems aside, I think he's got a mojo issue, if anything, more than anything at the moment. I don't know what the situation is with him, but...
Well, certainly, I mean... Yeah, last year, I think a lot of people felt that he was in pole position with three or four meets to go, and then he just crumbled, and he just seemed to...
Yeah, he did. Well, maybe that's throw it away. Fragility on his part. I think there's a little bit of concern in the other teams as to whether Michel Fabrizio is going to have a decent motor for the next round, because obviously, if you put Marco and Michel and Eugene all on a fast bike, you know, then you've got to... Then all the other teams need to look very hard at what's going on. So I don't know what sort of motor he's going to turn up with at the end of, you know, at Monza. But that was the other question I asked Ronald Tincate at the end of my interview, having asked him about the engine and him telling me that it was electronics. I did ask in the interview by asking him how confident he was about what he just told me, bearing in mind that Monza was the next track.
Yeah.
And he seemed fairly confident. He, you know, I think he thinks that if they can get the bike coming off the chicanes quick enough at Monza, he can hang in and slipstream. No one can ride faster than Jonathan, so they seemed pretty upbeat, actually, and I think that they felt that they were probably under a bit of pressure this weekend, because a bad result at Assen would have definitely set them off on a bit of a spiral heading towards Monza. But Jonathan, obviously, you know, he's very good at Assen, and he did get two very good results, considering, so I think they've left on a bit of a high, which is very good for the team, and we'll see what happens. I think they were probably, because they tested at Aragon, so I think they were probably a bit disappointed to not quite get what they were looking for at Aragon, having had a test there. So we shall see.
And of course, the other one who up and coming is Loris Baz, who got his first podium in the dry, and he seemed almost as surprised as everyone else. But I mean, I remember last year when we were all at Alton, and Loris's name came up, and yourself and James and Tony and the others were saying, yeah, he's definitely quick in the wet. We're yet to see whether he can replicate that in the dry. And it looks like he's blending with that bike very well. And I did read that he'd gone to and won the Le Mans 24 with another very youthful teammate. And apparently they just got out front and stayed there.
He's an emerging talent, Loris Baz. I mean, I think he's going to take another year or two to fully mature. Having said that, you never know, do you, with a guy like him? He's, you know, the bike's obviously good. Sykes obviously gets on with it very well. I mean, you never know that by in the next round or two, you never know, Baz might suddenly find a lot of form. He's a talented rider. I think he's a bright guy. I don't know him that well, but I've heard that he's a very bright guy. He knows what's going on. He's, you know, he's quite intelligent, so he's good at dealing with feedback and that sort of side of things. So, yeah, he's definitely an emerging talent. Definitely a force to be reckoned with.
Well, I mean, he's in sixth in the championship on 58, five behind Johnny Ray, who's 20 behind. We've got this three-ship of Eugene Laverty, Chas Davies and Tom Sykes all on 83 after some pretty dodgy results at Aragon, certainly Eugene with his double DNF. And Sylvain out front in with 111. And as James likes to say, he's basically an Englishman now. He's living in Leicestershire, married to an English girl.
He's a guy I really like, because I tell you what, he's not interested in PR fluff or flannel or anything like that. He does it like it is. He's a very nice, smiley guy. He's easy to talk to, and he's obviously on a bit of a roll. And when I went up to him at Aston and said, you know, Sylvain, two thirds and a first and blah, blah, blah. And he was really magnanimous about it and very self-effacing. And then I went up to him, I think he got third in race two. No, third in race one. And I said to him,
sixth in race two. You know, he just got pipped by Chaz in race two.
That was it. And I said, Chaz, has just cost you your run of first and second, you know, and he laughed and he smiled. He saw the funny side of it. You know, he's a really nice guy, Sylvain. And I think he's possibly, I think he's one of those guys that, you know, just listening to other people talking and stuff about him, that this is his kind of his make or break year. He's on the best, you know, he's on effectively the best bike. So he's got to prove that he's got it, and he's doing a pretty good job of it so far.
Yeah, I mean, he had a turbulent year last year, didn't he, with the Liberty Effenberg Racing, who've come back.
Yeah.
They're like the phoenix from the flames, risen from the ashes.
Yeah.
And they're like, bizarre.
He's one of those guys that actually, I think, that with a bit of consistency, I mean, I don't really know, but I mean, it seems to me that the Aprilia is such a nice bike to ride. I mean, I said to Sylvain, I asked him, what's the good point of your bike? And he said, obviously, it's quick and it handles really nicely. And I said, well, give me a negative about it. And he said, the only real negative really is me. He said, it's perfect. You know, if a rider would say that, then we're obviously pretty confident. I would imagine Sykes, he would say the same thing about his Kawasaki at the moment. The other thing that is I always find quite interesting is the moment these guys get a bit of confidence, like Gintelli's a classic example. You give them a bit of confidence, give them a couple of results, and I'll tell you what, they just start coming on and on and on, you know, and before you know it, they've become a bloody dominant force, you know. And Sylvain can
sort of self-reinforcing.
Yeah, it is, and they're all, you know, the difference in demeanour with some of these guys when they've had a good result is amazing, you know, and you need that confidence. Like Chaz this weekend, who's normally quite reserved, and he's a really nice guy to talk to, Chaz, I have to say, but he's normally quite reserved, he's very intelligent, but this weekend he was actually quite, not brilliant, not the right word, but he was definitely confident. He strode into the interview, sat down, I asked him a stupid question to start with about JLS, and he laughed, and he took it really good humouredly, and he went with it.
I did see all the JLS feed about it,
yeah. Well, he's normally quite a quiet guy, but give him a couple of results, his confidence was up. He knew he was going to have a good weekend, as it turned out, he didn't, but he felt like he was going to have a really good weekend, you know. So I think confidence is an amazing thing, and Sylvain's the same. So when you look at it like that, gives more impetus to. I thought Eugene's result in race two was amazing, really, because he was actually. His championship kind of hangs in the balance a little bit going into Assen. If he didn't get at least one decent result at Assen, he was really deeply in the doo-doo. And actually, he not only, you know, he rode a fantastic race to get a win, it's kept his championship going. And doing that when you're not confident and when you, you know, you come off a crash and that sort of thing, more, you know, even more testament to him how good a rider Eugene is.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And it was a great race. Those two dicing away was great to see. And Eugene tweeted something today saying apparently the Kawasakis are still running carburettors rather than fuel injection. I only found that out when they said that a slide cost them the victory, which I think is his worst saying. Yeah, he wouldn't have caught me anyway. But
yeah,
And of course, we also had a brilliant World Super Sport race. Sam Lowes and Keenan Sofoglu dicing out the front. And absolutely. I mean, James and Jack were saying they felt that Keenan had let Sam through to sort of check him out towards the end of the race, then pop back in front thinking, I can do this. But, I mean, you knew that was the only place Sam could get him. It was almost a double bluff. But he got past despite Keenan's outstretched leg.
I kind of read it. I mean, it's tricky when you're in the media scene because you don't get to watch a race properly. It's not like you're sitting in front of the telly in quiet watching it. But from my opinion, it looked to me like there was a bit of, you go first, no after you, you know, you go first. And I really wanted to ask Sam about that in his post-race interview, but we got cut short. The way that the Dorna have taken over, their post-race interviews and stuff are now a little bit more regimented. I've got someone poking me in the ribs all the time saying, you know, one question. I really wanted to ask him about that, but I never actually got the chance to ask him. I'll speak to him at Alton and just say what was going on. But fantastic ride by Sam. That was an absolute pleasure to watch, I have to say. Having said that, full credit to Keenan. I know he's not the most popular bloke with everybody, but from my point of view, on a personal level, he's a really nice guy to deal with. He's another guy, really bright, really intelligent, very good with the media and the PR sort of people. And he's a flipping, you know, he's a tough rider. And I think if Sam can beat him more than anybody, I mean, that's the other good thing from Sam's point of view for me, is that if he beats Keenan this year, Christ alive, he'll deserve that championship. And that's going to stand him in really good stead when he's looking to get up into World Superbikes, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it's strange. There was interviews at PI just before the season started. And Sam said, you know, Keenan's not a rider I like at all. Which was really quite stressed, but I have to respect him. You know, he's very frustrated.
Yeah.
And then interviewed Keenan, and he came, and I thought, if you carry on, I'm going to have to start liking you, because he came across as a really interested, motivated rider. You know, there's a lot gone on in his life, good and bad.
Exactly.
But he just seemed...
You have to bear that in mind. He's just a bit of a nutter. I mean, last year, I think it was at Magna Paul last year when he brought down Dan Linford. I have to say, I wasn't keen as a big fan there because I think that he was guilty of something quite bad in motorbike racing, which is absolute blinkered, you know, red mist of the worst kind. And lots of riders get that. I don't hold it against Keenan. I know he's done it before. He's got a bit of a past, but you kind of have to have a sneaking admiration for a guy that's actually fully prepared to, you know, I think some of what Keenan's got wouldn't do well, you know, would do well if you passed out to a few other riders, you know, that grit and determination to actually do anything. I'm not condoning by any way, you know, dangerous riding or knocking people off, but Jesus Christ, you can't tell Keenan anything. He will, you know, he puts his visor down and that's the end of the world for him. He's just on his bike and that's it. And it's as simple as that. I kind of admire that about him. And like I said, on a personal level, he's a very nice guy to talk to. He's easy to get hold of. And he's, you know, he's a good PR sort of dude, you know.
But it's, I mean, the attempted headbutt at 175 mile an hour on the arrogant back straight.
I got Keenan, right? I asked Keenan about that. And he said to me, no. And I have to say, well, I believe Keenan on this because I asked him and I heard him tell me himself, yeah? And he said he wasn't actually, I can see that it was a cack and he was actually trying to tell, I think, was it with Sam? I can't remember who it was.
No, wasn't it Fabian Foray? I think it was Foray.
That's right. I asked him about that, actually a good deal after the event, and Fabian at the same time, at the same meeting, I asked them both about that incident. And Fabian just brushed it off and said, I don't know what, you know, Keenan. But Keenan said that he was actually trying to signal something to Keenan. It was a cack-handed kind of, he was trying to do something. He was trying to give some sort of communication to Fabian. He wasn't trying to headbutt him off because that would just be crazy. And I honestly, Martin, I believe that he wasn't actually trying to do something. What he did was stupid, but his motivation wasn't actually, he wasn't trying to headbutt someone off. He was actually trying to signal. He was trying to just, you know, get an angry message across. And I kind of, when I left after having spoken to Keenan about that, I thought, well, actually, that kind of makes sense, in the context that he put it in, which was he was trying to tell Fabian to do something or whatever it was, but it just sort of went wrong. I kind of believed him. I could now, on reflection, you know, retract that statement and not believe him, but actually at the time it felt like it felt pretty reasonable at the time. And I asked Fabian about it, and Fabian was cool about it. He was like, you know, it's no big deal. I think, you know, whatever he did for whatever his motivations were, fine. It didn't really, you know, he's keen and that's the way that he is. So,
he was being a knob, but not necessarily a wanker.
That's exactly my point. He did a big knobby thing to do. It was a mistake, a massive mistake. But I don't think he was actually, you know, if Keenan wanted to flipping headbutt someone off, it'd be off. You know what he's like. He's that way. I mean, you know, with the incident last year, I thought that was absolutely horrendous what he did there. That was unforgivable as a rider, really. But you know, you have to forgive him. I certainly have to forgive him because I have to go and interview him every weekend at World Superbikes or whatever. So I've got to, you know, you've got to maintain some form of rapport with him. And it's not for me to judge what people are doing on the track and all that sort of thing. It's just for me to ask the questions, really.
Yeah, yeah. And, of course, Fabian Foray is leading the championship with 54 points with Michael van der Mark on 49. Sam and Keenan again tied on 45. Yeah. And I've got to be honest, I mean, Michael van der Mark's, you know, made his mark, forgive the pun.
Yeah, brilliant.
Since he's come in. Fabian's just been there forever. I think he's been there since World Supersport was invented, I'm convinced.
If not before.
Yeah.
I've got to say, van der Mark, I spoke to him, I interviewed him first thing on Friday morning, and I asked him about how it was a local round, local pressure, you know, that's coming up with like a two very good results that he's not really kind of expected to get. But coming into his local round, he's only a young guy. I said, how confident are you? How well do you know the track? Obviously, he said, you know, I know the track intimately, you know, looking pretty confident. And then he had a bad qualifying, and then, you know, he was up and down at one stage. I'm sure I looked at the race, and he was like in 15th or 16th. And then he knuckled down, and he got it down to, I think he came in fourth, did he, or something like that?
Yeah, he came in fourth, yeah.
Yeah, which is, I have to say, that's a flipping good result for him. I mean, I think he's another one, real good up-and-coming talent. I have to say, the team absolutely love him. Ronald McDonald's never been so... Sorry, Ronald Tincarte has never been so happy. Ronald Tincarte has never been so happy to have a Dutch rider. And I have to say, he looks like being a really good Dutch rider. Ever such a nice bloke, really good to interview, very bright, speaking three languages, and just a nice guy. And I would definitely rate him. He's definitely going to be a talent in the future.
And it is also great to see Robbie Rolfo out there. I mean, the guy has raced in, got to be every, I'm sure he appeared at the TT on sidecars one year. You know, he's raced every series.
Yeah.
for years and years and years. And that Envy Augusta is just drop dead gorgeous to look at. It just seems to have a few issues.
Yeah.
You know,
well, I spoke to Christian Iden, who's also on the Envy, and he was saying it's a really nice bike. He seemed to quite like it, but I think it's, again, it's a new bike. They're looking at the long picture, I would guess. And I think, I'm not sure, he came in about 12 or something like that. But, I mean, Christian's a really good rider. He did really well in the wet practice, I think, on the Friday. He was looking, in fact, he was second quickest, but he might have been the fastest on the wet practice.
There were some strange results thrown up.
Yeah, and it was cold, and there weren't that many people out there. But, you know, fair play to him. I like Christian, and he's a good rider, definitely a talent.
But, I mean, Parkingo, they're a great team. They, you know, they've won the championship with Chaz. Yeah. They've done well. Obviously, it's a new manufacturer.
I don't know how much of that original Chaz team is left, actually. I think a fair bit of it has been dispatched into other areas. I'm not sure how much, although it runs on the Parkingo manor, I'm not sure how much staff are actually still left in there from the year that Chaz was there, or the couple of years that Chaz was there. But they're still a good team. They look very smart. They look very professional. Full credit to Christian. I think, you know, give them a season to get going. I think these guys find it's quite a hard thing to jump into the World 2 Tour Championship. It's flipping tight. You've got to beat Sam and Keenan for a start if you're going to be anywhere near it. And that's quite a big ask if you're going to come in out of, you know, whatever you were doing last year, British Super Stocks or Super Sport 600 or something like that, to then hop up into the World Circus on new tracks and stuff like that and a new bike. It's a big ask. But he'll get there, hopefully.
And of course, we've got MotoGP at Jerez this weekend, and everyone who, and there's been so many diverse opinions on Marquez. You know, last year I read one, it was a tweet that was retweeted several times, I think, because it was so ridiculous, saying, you know, anyone could be at the top if they had the advantages he'd been given. When he was doing mini moto, he had a telemetry guy. And I'm thinking, do you know what? I bet he didn't. And the thing is, you could say the same about Valentino Rossi, you know, but why do these guys get the best kit? It's because they're identified as having a special talent. Exactly. Yeah.
So, you know, it's not about that.
They're identified, I think. I mean, he does seem to be the real deal. He's won his second time out. I was interested I know you guys, your team on production are mainly BSB and World Superbikes, but as a keen observer of the sport, I was wondering what your thoughts were about Danny Pedrosa and the effect it's likely to have on him.
Well, I did produced the windows from wherever we were last. Where were they last? What was the last race? Oh, Cotter. And I'm not one of those people who likes to say what I think Danny should do and what he shouldn't do. But I have to say, I thought that some Danny Pedrosa, for me, just put Keenan Sofwagli into the overtake that Marquez made on Danny Pedrosa. Keenan Sofwagli would never have let that happen. Or, you know, a million other riders, Johnny Ray, I can't see them in, and they would have let the brakes off and they'd have run them both. He just, you know, there was a hell of a lot of stake there. There's reputations, everything at stake, and Danny just wound it in, sat in behind him, and that was it, and it was all over. And I have to say, that's how I view Danny Pedrosa for always. I've never seen him really make an overtake that I can remember. I've never seen him do anything aggressive. He just doesn't float my boat, I have to say. So I'm not surprised actually that Marquez is whipping him. And I think actually, I mean, the psychological effects of that have got to be tremendous.
Well, I think, I can't remember if it was last year or the year before. I think it was the year before. It must have been 2011. Jorge was, I think, 2 seconds behind Danny with 3 laps to go at Jerez.
Yeah.
And he reeled him in a lap and a half, went past him. And Danny showed a little spark of fight. And then Jorge, you know, went back past him again and won. And last year, there were a couple of times towards the end of the season where he showed a little bit of fight. But no, I've got to be honest, I completely agree with you. I think my personal opinion is last year was his best chance to win the title, and he blew it.
Absolutely.
And I think this year, with Valentino back on the Yamaha, with Jorge in the form he's in, with Marquez upcoming, and now let's bear in mind, we've got to be realistic. You know, Jorge got pole in his first two MotoGP races, and he won the third, and then he started throwing himself at the scenery. As Duncan Bishop said quite wonderfully.
Like that,
Yeah, well, Duncan said it wasn't Lorenzo Land, it was Where Will Lorenzo Land for a
yeah,
while,
exactly.
Which was which was terrible to watch.
Generally in the car park, yeah, it was.
Yeah, I mean, there were several I can see my house from here moments during
yeah,
that season.
Whoppers,
for him.
Absolute whoppers, yeah.
But you know, so far he seems to be, well, Valentino said at the Sepang test, didn't he? He said we could be seeing something new. This is, he's got a different way of riding the rest of us, and it's evolution and or revolution, whichever way you want to
yeah.
look at it. But it's going to be interesting. I mean, I think most people's tips before the season started were you know, it's going to be between Lorenzo Rossi and the HRC pair of Pedrosa and Marquez.
Yeah.
And I think a lot
yeah.
of people are now saying, I think it's going to come down to Lorenzo or Marquez.
Yeah. I don't know. I have to say, I think you'd have a much better idea after this weekend, because Rossi, I think, is quite confident coming into Jerez. There was a lot of talk, the Eurosport.com, Steve Day and Julian Ryder and Neil Spodding were talking a lot about Valentino Rossi quoting things saying he didn't like new circuits, and there were a lot of teaching old dogs new tricks sort of stuff. And actually,
yeah.
I don't know whether this is true or not, but it would seem to me that when I first got into motorbike racing, which is quite a long time ago, people took time to learn, and you know, when you went to a new circuit, you had to give a guy a bit of time to learn a new circuit, and then that seems to have evaporated now. And actually, if you're not within a couple of seconds on your first or second lap at a brand new circuit, you're nowhere. I mean, I remember speaking to Ben Spies when he turned up at Phillip Island first for his first ride in World Superbikes.
Yeah,
and he did his first lap around Phillip Island ever was 3 seconds off his pole lap. Yeah. And I spoke
wow.
to him about it. I said, how do you actually do that? And he said, well, what I do is I get on the bike and I tag in behind someone and I go at the same speed as them and I frighten myself absolutely to death. And then I work back to make that comfortable, which is actually the reverse of how I would have done it, you know, which is to build up to as fast as you can go.
Yeah.
And it seems to me that nowadays you just don't have time to learn a circuit. And Rossi is an old school sort of dude. So I think, I'm a big Rossi fan, as you know, I would hope that Valentino just took a bit of time to learn. You know, I'm not making excuses for him, but we'll see what happens in Jerez to see whether he's going to be in the championship hunt. Whether Pedrosa, again, like what you're saying, is going to be there, I don't know. And also, you've got to bear in mind, I think it would suit Honda to get a Japanese, or not to have two. I know they're Repsol sponsored, but having two Spanish riders, I don't think, might not be the best thing, especially one of them's underperforming. So,
well, I think Nakamoto said before this season started, he said, I think if Danny doesn't win it this year, he never will, which I took to mean, well, he certainly won't be doing it with HRC because we'll get rid of him. But he then went on to say, but if he does win it this year, then it could be the start of winning it many times. And I thought, no, can't see it. He hasn't, like you say, he hasn't got that fire that Casey had, that Valentino has obviously had.
You've got to remember as well that actually Jonathan Rea actually equipped himself really, really well last year on that bike. And, you know, there's a lot of talent. You know, we're actually quite talent heavy at the moment. There's plenty of young riders, you know, from BSB upwards with the Alex Lowe's and all those sort of people through World Superbikes. There's plenty of talent around for Honda. And you've got the likes of Jonathan. I mean, Jonathan's going to be an interesting person to watch what he does at the end of this year, because that's another thing I've got to ask him. Later on in the year, I'm going to speak to Jonathan and I'm going to ask him what his plans are, because, you know, if Tencate have a bad year this year and Jonathan's mid-pack, then how long is he going to hang on waiting for this MotoGP ride that might never come? So it's going to be quite interesting to watch what he does at the end of this year, because there's no point in him carrying on haranguing around mid-pack for Tencate when actually he could be taking the Aprilia ride next year and being a four-time World Superbike champion, or, you know, whatever, his prospects could be a lot better, whereas he's hanging around, sitting on this Tencate bike, everybody says it's old and we're all making excuses for and all that sort of thing. But actually, he's the guy who's been affected more than anyone, because he said, and we know what Honda are like with I think it was Colin Edwards, they sort of promised him when he became World Superbike champion, they were like, oh yeah, you can come, and they dangled him from a string for a couple of years. And eventually Colin said, oh, I can't wait any longer, and he went off and did something else. I can't remember what the actual dynamics
He went to Aprilia on the Cube in 2003, didn't he? And then from there he got the Yamaha ride.
Right, so he just, but you could, I remember at the time thinking, Christ, you know, how long do you wait for this amazing Honda ride?
Yeah.
You know, but your career can evaporate. You know, it's a life changer. For someone like Jonathan Rea, it's a life-changing decision coming up in the next year or two. What he's going to do, where's he going to be?
Exactly. Well, I mean, what's Johnny now, 25?
25
he must
years,
be 20. Yeah, and yeah, exactly. And this is you know, make or break year, really, isn't it? Because as soon as you get into your late 20s, you ain't going to be starting something new.
No,
except
exactly.
Maybe as a development rider on a CRT type level.
He's got to get another go. I mean, I thought he did really well on the HRC bike last year. He didn't crash it. He did what they did, and he got, you know, turned in some good results. You know, he turned in a good result. So he, you know, but again, there's probably other riders. I mean, there's Moto2, Moto2, there's lots of other, you know, there's a lot of people floating around. There's no, Jonathan's not assuming that, we're obviously assuming that Pedrosa's out at the end of the season, which I would have said probably wasn't going to happen with his Repsol deal and all that sort of thing. But, you know, there's a lot of riders hanging around, angling around for that bike, and, you know, where's it going to go? That's the interesting thing, really.
And the interesting one coming up is Nakagami in Moto2.
Yes.
Now, I don't know enough about him to know if he's tied into a manufacturer already.
No.
We haven't had... Okay, we got Hiroshi Ayama back on a CRT bike, but we haven't had a competitive Japanese rider in the top level probably since Kato. I mean...
There was Tobi Zao, wasn't there?
When was Abe? No, he was... Nyokiabi was before Kato, wasn't he? Yeah, so we're looking about 10 years. I mean, I know Norihaga had his moments. Kageyama came in for the odd season, but we're not really. I'm gone completely blank. Shinji. Someone will write in and tell us who the hell it is we're trying to think of. Shinji Nakama. He got quite old, you know, still running MotoGP, but he was never really a contender. So, you know, geez, we need it. And he's dominated by Japanese manufacturers. Well, we need a Japanese rider on there. So Nakagami could be an up and comer. Stefan Bradl is still impressing at LCR, although maybe. You know, again, it's this old thing. It was the same with Melange, wasn't it, in MotoGP? Stick him on an underperforming dog of a bike and he'd overperform. Stick him on a factory bike and Ducati would send him off for psychiatric assessments. I think Dovi, this is why Ducati actually suits Dovi, because he does well when the expectations are low.
Yeah,
absolutely.
I couldn't agree with you more. I'd be really interested. No, I actually have to say, I know nothing about what's going on at Ducati with Dovi. I know that he was not looking like he was going to do anything when he hopped up and he's put in a couple of good results. So he's a good rider. He seems like a nice guy whenever I've spoken to him. But I'm not sure that Ducati, I mean, that could be a career breaker, couldn't it?
I think he's exceeding what people expected him to be able to do, considering he's gone from Honda, which he'd been with his whole career. He jumps on with Yamaha and he does amazingly well. I mean, one of the things I spoke to Hervé last year at Silverstone, I said, you know, you've got two riders with incredibly different styles in Cal Crutchlow and Andrea Dovizioso, and yet they're within a split second of each other in nearly every race. And Hervé basically said, yeah, I have kittens, you know. Now he's gone to Ducati and he's, and I know that, and this will annoy our American listeners. Most of our listeners are American listeners, so it'll annoy most of our listeners. And Nick is a wonderful fella, and he's obviously an incredibly talented rider and an ex-world champion. But I'm sorry, Dovi is outperforming him. And Nick has been there for, what, four seasons? This is his fourth season, I think.
No, so I think that's a real weird one for Nicky, because he's actually, I'll tell you what, he's a flipping superstar, Nicky, and he's a fantastic rider. Nobody doubts anything, but he's fairly quiet, you know. I don't really know what his problem is. I mean, it's like you said, Dovi's kind of throwing the cat in the pigeons again. He's a bit like he's doing what Casey Stoner did, and you know, Valentino also did nothing on that bike at all, couldn't even get close. Give it to Dovi, and it's a different sort of ballgame. So it does make you wonder whether that bike's very finicky towards us, you know, only wants to be ridden in a certain kind of way. I don't know. I really don't know.
But I mean, Dovi is classic Lorenzo style, smooth, 250, maintain your corner speed, and that's what it can't do. It tucks in the corners. You know, we saw those front wheel crashes that Casey had in his last year, and Nicky and Valentino were having, and it's like, it's weird. But I mean, I spoke to Dovi last year, and he's so unassuming. He's so quiet, and he looked mildly surprised that I mean, for all he knew, I was a proper journalist. He didn't realise I was just a an amateur hack. He'd managed to blag his way in and had a, you know, a little voice recorder. But he seemed quite surprised that I wanted to talk to him, because he was sat in a corner whilst there was a mob around Cal. Well, I knew I'm not going to get close to Cal when you got such luminaries as Michael Scott and David Emmett and that, you know, who are getting his attention, who he knows. So I went and spoke to Dovey, and he was absolutely charming. But he kind of made the point. He said, look, when I'm not racing, I'm at home, I drive an estate car, I've got a wife and children. I'm not interesting. So no one's interested. He said, the only way I can get people interested is when I win. He said, and I've only managed that one. That was a weird race. That was the Donington of 2 or 3 years ago, wasn't it, in the wet. And I kind of feel sorry for him. And I think, you know, really, we should look at his results. But interesting character. But it is going to be a fascinating season in MotoGP without a shadow of a doubt.
It'll be interesting to see what happens, because obviously Audi are going to put a fair bit. I know that Neil Sporting had a meeting with a very, very senior guy at Audi recently, which he is going to publish in the magazine he writes for. But I know that I think Audi are definitely on board with the bike racing thing, and they're definitely in there to get Ducati. They're not happy. I didn't get the feeling that they're going to be saying, oh, well, we've had enough of this, it's not working for us, let's get rid of MotoGP. It sounded like it was the opposite of that, and they're fully ready to get on board, put some funds in. And you never know what, you know, you just never know what that's going to do, especially with a different rider, you know, an injection of cash, some Audi technology, who knows, you know. By the end of the season, it could have all turned around. That's the great thing about bike racing. You're only, you know, it's only as good as the last race. You never know what's going to happen at the next one. That's why I love
Exactly. And, of course, we've now got... is it Helmut Gobmeier in charge?
No, he's in charge of Ducati. Yeah, he's come from BMW World Superbikes last year, which I think he had a fairly torrid time in with Melandri and Hazard and BMW garage. I think there was a bit of political stuff going on there. So I think he came from a fairly torrid sort of situation there. I interviewed him a couple of times. He's quite a nice bloke. It'd be interesting to see what he obviously comes from quite an impressive car background. But whether that applies to bikes and whether that's an advantage when you come into bike racing, don't know.
The other thing, of course, though, is that, I mean, it did appear that Rossi was the irresistible force, but Felipe Prezioso was the immovable object when it came to the clashes they had about the Ducati over the last 2 years.
Yeah.
And Prezioso's gone. And that could open the way to a complete, you know, bottom-up redesign of that bike.
Well, I think it was Gobmeier that basically, when BMW came into the World Superbike Championship, it was a German manufacturer run by a German team, which was, you know, a lot of offshoots from the BMW F1 and their touring cars, and there was a lot of technology and all that sort of stuff coming in. And I think it was Gobmeier, actually, that came in and changed all that by saying, look, you know, we're going to changed the whole staff situation, because originally it was all Germans and it was only going to be Germans and blah blah blah. And I think he was the one that actually came in and realised that actually wasn't quite working like that, and they needed to mix things up and mess things around a bit, which is what they did. And I think that from there, I think it was actually fairly soon after. Don't pick me up on this, because this could be completely wrong, but I think it was not long after he came into the team that Corsa suddenly got his podium at somewhere like Monza maybe or something like that, and things started acting to sort of move. I think they'd mired themselves into a bit of a hole. They were quite convinced that they knew what they were talking about when it came to technology, because they were obviously coming from all their car expertise. And I think they were probably struggling with the riders, who were telling them that it doesn't quite work like that, you know, and the riders weren't quite getting listened to quite as much as they should have been. And I think it was Gobmeier that came in and probably saw that problem and sorted it all out. So you never know, he might be a positive, you know, positive force in Ducati. Let's hope so.
And Audi certainly have the drive. I mean, we saw what they do with their with the Le Mans, their endurance car racing. They've come in and
they don't can the whole thing, because it's actually bad, you know, for a brand like Ducati, being at the back doesn't do them any good. Do you know what I mean? So actually, unless they're confident that they can actually, you know, pull things forward, and you'd have to say actually you don't know what's happened, because like you said, we've just been talking about how well Dovi's doing. And that might be the immediate effect of something that's happened, you know, because Audi have come in. You don't know. I'm not entrenched in MotoGP enough to know that sort of stuff. That's a Toby Moody and Julian Ryder question, really. I'd like to know, though. If you find that, let me know.
absolutely. Charlie, that's brilliant. We won't keep you any longer. That's a cracking round up there.
Thanks, Martin. But, I've got one quick question for you.
Yes.
Who would you put on the, assuming that Hazard's out for the next two races, Who would you like to see on that Honda?
Well, the obvious answer is Damien Cadlin, who is the de rigueur substitute for all riders in all series. The difficulty is, I think, you can look at, you know, other riders Honda riders who could come in and do a job. And you're thinking, well, Alex Lowes. But Alex Lowes is competing, you know, he's trying to win a BSB championship. You know, it's like when Bradley Smith was offered a chance to go from, was it Bradley who was offered a chance to make a jump across to cover someone for injury? I think that was his last season of 125 up in what was then 250. And he turned it down and it was like, what are you doing? It's like, well, I'm actually trying to win a 125 race here. Now, of course, with different series, the timing may work out that someone could do it. You've clearly got someone in mind.
No, not at all. But I've heard a lot of people when we were out there and it happened, we were hearing lots of people. There were a lot of people saying, oh, Alex Lowes. Yeah, I mean, I have to say, I would love to see Alex Lowes hop up into a World Superbike ride. But
yeah,
I think there's a couple of things. Obviously, there's the mechanical thing of, you know, the political thing of he's riding in British Superbikes and blah, 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 blah. But even if you could oversee all those, you've got to look at it from Alex's point of view. And actually, you've also got to look at it in the detail of the fact that Monza coming up next. And actually, it's still, whatever you say about the 10-car device, with Jonathan Ray on it, you know, they just about get there. But with Alex on there, it might be not such a cool move for him. It might not be something that's actually that appealing to Alex. Do you know what I mean? Because actually, suddenly you're going to jump on the slowest bike at the fastest circuit, which might actually backfire on him. So I could see that it would seem like a
The other option would be Keo. I mean, Keo's riding for Samsung Honda. He knows Monza.
Why would you want to put Keo on the bike? I mean, he's... you could do, I suppose, but... No. I mean, that's the thing for me. I mean, I don't know. There's a lot of talk about Gino Rea. I think that Maxime Berger was the name I had mentioned for it and stuff. And Ronald and Garrett, I think, were planning on sitting down on Sunday night and having a talk. I think, I'm not sure how extensive Leon's injuries are, but I think he's definitely going to be out for a couple of rounds. It was a nasty break. So he's not going to be helping out. I tell you what's quite funny about that situation is I was in the press office when it happened. And Steve Booth, their press officer, came up to me and said, Leon's had an accident, broke his leg. And what was ironic is if it had been any other rider, you'd go, oh, Christ, what are you going to do? He's going to be out for a bit. Who are you going to replace him with? But with Leon Haslam, you say, oh, right, when's he coming back then? Because you know what he's like? He might well have turned up and made it out in qualifying. That's a bit tough, Leon. So I don't know the answer to that question, Martin, but I don't know. I'd love to see Alex Lowes have a go at it, but I'm not sure it would be a great move on his part. Don't know.
No, and I mean, the other one is I'm thinking of Keo. We were talking earlier about people losing their mojo. I mean, wow.
Yeah.
Shaky just goes year after year after year. And I think probably Shaky's made a good decision not to go and do the CRT with Paul Bird in MotoGP.
Yeah.
Because he can seal his place in legendary BSB status.
Exactly.
And I've got to be honest, Michael Laverty's doing... I think Michael's got a fantastic attitude. He's doing a fantastic job on a development bike.
Yeah.
So all round, I think that one worked out quite well. But and it's a shame.
I don't honestly know what's happening here. I think he's just he's the same as he was. I know that he I spoke to someone who I won't talk about, who said to me the end of last year.
Yeah.
And he nearly ran into the back of someone. I'd said to whoever it was, who was quite closely connected to him, what do you reckon his problem is? And he said at the time, and like I said, this is going back a season and a half, he said that he nearly ran into the back of someone at somewhere, I can't remember where it was now, and it just frightened the living bejesus out of him. And I don't think he ever got over it.
No.
And I think that maybe that's, you know, he's another one. I mean, it's quite interesting to know what happens to kids. You know, when you have kids, maybe it changes your attitude a little bit. You know, you've got to contemplate this sort of, you know, the dangers and all that sort of stuff. So I don't know whether Keo's just, people do just lose the plot a little bit. We'll have to see what happens at Alton this weekend. I mean, he's a good one around Alton. So again, we'll have to see.
I mean,
he's a nice guy.
A lot of people put that down with Norrie, wasn't it? When he was it Ruben Zelfs smashed into the back of him? during practice around, and people said Norrie never got his mojo back after that. But the thing about kids always makes me laugh because of Colin Edwards' comment where he said, yeah, everyone says kids slow you down because you've got this mortality caption. He said, hell no, he said, it's made me a second a lap faster. He said, I've got to feed these little bastards.
Yeah.
And it just...
Colin, that's why you have Colin Edwards, isn't it? Because in that case, that's exactly it. I think it must affect someone. It affects their kids. I mean, of course, you wouldn't say Shaky's not slowed down at all because of having kids or anything like that. But maybe it does affect some other guys. I mean, I don't know. It's a tricky one. But Keir's definitely lost the plot a little bit, or he certainly had at Thruxton.
He's not there, is he?
He looks, I've got to say, he looks... Even before the racing at Thruxton, he's head down. He's not, he looks like he's in real trouble. I don't know how much, I don't know what his relationship's like with Adrian Gorst. I would imagine they get on pretty well, but I don't know. It's a tricky one with Keir, I have to say. It'd be interesting to see how he goes this week. I think if he goes badly this weekend, then I think that's it. It's going to be the war for fourth, not the war for four.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Yeah, unfortunately, I'm working this weekend. I've run out of holiday days for this year, so I'm not going to make it to Alton. But hope the weather stays good for you.
Yeah, and, flying around and living the dream.
Yeah. Flying our new babe. Yeah, she's really good fun. Charlie,
good luck
thanks.
That.
Yo, thank you, and good luck.
Thanks very much. Always a pleasure to speak to you.
No problems. And we will hopefully we'll catch up with you later on in the season and we can see how everything's going and how wildly off the mark all our predictions were.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we'll play this interview back and we'll see how wildly wrong we are and then nobody wants to speak to us again.
Absolutely.
Cheers, mate. Good luck.
Cheers, Charlie. Ta-da.
Bye.
So thanks very much indeed again to Charlie, and I will certainly be hoping to speak to Charlie later on in the season and see how things are going. We've got this weekend, Jerez, as you said, Jim. In fact, we're 7 minutes away from FP1 in Moto3 going out.
This is going to be a late night for me. This is where I curse you because, well, you've got to shuffle off to work, which I know that you're going to go to work and you're going to fire up your computer and be watching it while you wait for a call.
Oh, no, I'm not working today. I've got a mate's picking us up at 8:30 and we've got to go and do some stuff. But it's my last day off today. Then I'm back to work tomorrow, which will be challenging. I'll be like, whenever qualifying's on anything, I'll be like, please, everyone be really careful. I don't need a shout.
I think I might stay up and watch just a little bit of it before I nod off. It might mean that I stay on the couch. Myself and the girl have a rule. If I stay up past 2 a.m., you're sleeping on the couch.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's
completely valid rule.
We also have Alton Park BSB this weekend, and that always produces good racing. So if you guys haven't seen a BSB race and you found a way of seeing one, those who live overseas, I thoroughly recommend watching the Alton Park. It's, in the words of Chris Walker, it's a bunch of fucking bumpy fucking bumpy corners and fucking bumpy hills held together with a few fucking bumpy straights. I love it.
I need to bring the stalker back on. He was a great interview.
Ah, he's brilliant, isn't he? Absolutely brilliant.
Oh, and this weekend, for those of you that are into UK club racing, specifically Thundersport GB, Mark Miller will be racing at
Pembrey. I did a few track days at Pembrey. It's only 1.6 miles, the circuit, but it's got a little bit of everything. And you've got the back straight goes into the home straight, and that is two fast straights. But the back straight has got a little right-hand kink, which me on a 600 could just about do flat out. The top riders obviously do it on superbikes flat out. It's scary. It is scary. I found it scary. They'll probably love it. And then connecting the end of the home straight to the start of that back straight is just some fantastic swooping left, right. It really is a great little circuit.
Yeah. He's doing this kind of as a tune up for the TT.
Mm.
So he's doing a couple, he picked up a first and a second last weekend at Snetterden, in pretty good weather, is my understanding. So I was giving him shit. I called him a cherry picker, in text. I'm like, dude, you're great. You got a first and a second in club racing, but frankly, for a track that he's never seen before, well done.
Yeah.
And I saw some of the photos from there, and he was definitely on it. And some of the guys were running that. I looked up their histories. I'm like, oh, they've run BSB in the past. So no mean feat. Well done, Miller. I just like to give him shit. You know that.
Absolutely. All the time.
Yeah, go on.
I was going to say, we've got the Fantasy League update. You and I have ended up with the same World Superbike crew.
I saw that. Did you do that on purpose?
No, I didn't notice until after I'd done it. I just, because I went and made all these changes, and then of course it said to me, yeah, you only allowed to do three at a time, not five. So, but yes, definitely for this window, World Superbike is the six World Superbike races, only two MotoGP and the double meet at Alton in BSB. So you want to load up the three MotoGP. There might be three MotoGP, but World Superbike is going to be the one where the most points are to be gained or lost. So you've bumped yourself up to 25th. I've overtaken Jules. I'm 51st. Jules is 59th. And I believe we've got over 300 people in the league now.
We do. And the thing that kind of cracks me up is Toby Hurst is back on top. This is the gentleman that won the overall last year. He won a FZ8 for it. I don't believe he's overall right now in the entire competition, because there's something like 58,000 people that are playing this overall. But he's at the top of our league again. And I got a chance to meet and hang out with Toby at Austin. It was the first time I ever got a chance to meet. So I've gave him shit, of course, as you will. Nobody's going to be in my presence as a long-term Motopod listener without me giving you a little bit of grief, because shit, Martin, that's what I do.
Yeah, absolutely. So, but well done, Toby. I did notice him up there and I thought, oh, that's an ominous presence.
Mm-hmm. Yep. What else is going on? Martin, you'd mentioned the meetup from there. I think Jules and I kind of beat that to death last week, but anybody that showed up, much appreciated. And one of the things that I think we should do, and it just reminds me, and I should jot a note to myself, is everybody that does subscribe, we'll make sure to get out to you guys. We'll put together some subscriber stickers, maybe. Ooh, that's a good idea. Note to self.
Yes.
I may regret that later. Hey, did you, I'll ask this live on air. Did you ever get those stickers out to Dave Hopkinson?
I think so. Dave, if I didn't, drop us an email, martin@motorpodcast.com, with an address. And if I haven't, I'll send them. I sent a bunch out a few months ago.
Okay, well, this was a couple of weeks ago.
No, in that case, probably not.
Okay.
Okey-doke. Right. I will I'll get that. I'll get onto that one. I will have to root back through my emails, because I do remember.
All right. Yeah. Well, I'll take care of the details for you.
Okay.
once again, I do want to thank all those people that signed up. The subscription program is well and truly underway. And frankly, folks out there, it's the best way to help support the show. As I mentioned earlier in the show, just briefly, we have a contract in hand. What that contract means is that it's time to put together our fairly serious funds to make sure this show can do what is planned for this year. And that is just for MotoGP. It doesn't even include World Superbike or any of the national races. But that being said, we totally appreciate those of you that have donated to the show over the last week and over the last weeks. It's been a great little fundraising drive. We do need to keep it up. And so, if you can help, please do so. You can go to motopodcast.com. On the left-hand side, there's a little sidebar. There will be two buttons, one donate, one subscribe. Underneath the subscribe one is a little drop-down menu. It's kind of obscured, but just try it out. And allow you to choose the amount of money that you would like to donate on a monthly basis to the show. Or you can just do a single donation. Whatever you can do to give us a hand would be super cool. Like I said, I'm literally looking at the contract right here, and page 3 has the amount on it. And that means that we could really, really use your help. This includes getting Martin to races, getting Phil to races, getting folks around the globe to races to help us cover, as you well know, in depth and live ish with racers and cool interviews, the kind of stuff that we like to bring to you. So whatever you can do to help us out, super cool. Otherwise, you can just listen for free. But, you know, it's kind of fun to play along. Martin, I think we should get the show on the road. Many thanks to Charlie Hiscott for joining us. Always cool.
Absolutely. And just the very last thing, I was just looking there to see if any times have been posted yet, but it seems that the Moto3 guys are taking it easy at the start of their first session. And Jerez have named the last corner after Jorge Lorenzo, which he's apparently feels very honored by.
I sent you an email today, Martin, forwarded you an email from the Yamaha MotoGP crew. You don't check your email often enough. was a tribute to Jorge Lorenzo with a downloadable video.
Yes, I've seen the email. I saw what it was about. I just haven't had time to actually watch the video yet. But, yeah, good news. I thought they'd have named it the punt corner in honor of Valentino Rossi and Sete Gibernau together. But
no wanking to the Jorge video.
No what, sorry?
No wanking.
Okay, I'll try not to. Oh, that's gross. I need a shower. I needed a shower anyway, actually, but there you go.
All right, mate, give my love to Sharon. You guys be good, and we will talk to all of you out in Motopod land later.
Absolutely. Good night, all.
Cheers. Zoom, zoom.
Zoom, 38. Bang on. That includes your zoom, zoom as well. It's nice to have the zoom, zoom.